Welcome back to the Saddleback Civil Forum on the presidency, and welcome Senator John McCain.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I'm really glad to be here.
Thank you.
Now, my first question was the cone of silence comfortable that you were in just now?
I was trying to hear through the wall.
Okay, this first set of questions deals with leadership and the personal life of leadership. First question is, who are the three wisest people that you know that you would rely on heavily in an administration?
The first one, I think, would be General David Petraeus, one of the great military leaders in American history, who took us from defeat to victory in Iraq. One of the great leaders. Fourth of July a year ago, Senator Lindsey Graham and I were in Baghdad. 688 brave young Americans whose enlistment had expired swore an oath of re-enlistment to stay and fight for freedom. Only someone like General David Petraeus could motivate someone like that. I think John Lewis. John Lewis was at the Edmund Pettus Bridge, had his skull fractured, continued to serve, continues to have the most optimistic outlook about America. He can teach us all a lot about the meaning of courage and commitment to causes greater than our self-interest. Meg Whitman. Meg Whitman, the CEO of eBay. Meg Whitman, 12 years ago, there were 5 employees. Today, there are 1.5 million people that make a living off eBay in America and the world. It's one of these great American success stories. And in these economic challenging times, we need to call on the wisdom and knowledge, background of people like Meg Whitman, who have been able to make such a great American success story part of the world's folklore.
Okay. Let me ask you this. This is a character question.
I hope they get easier.
this one isn't any easier. We've had a lot of leaders, because of their weaknesses, character flaws, stumbled, become ineffective, or not even serving anymore, serving our country. What's been your greatest moral failure, and what has been what do you think is the greatest moral failure of America?
They don't get any easier.
No, they don't get any easier.
My greatest moral failing, and I have been a very imperfect person, is the failure of my first marriage. It's my greatest moral failure. I think America's greatest moral failure has been, throughout our existence, perhaps we have not devoted ourselves to causes greater than our self-interest, although we've been the best at it of anybody in the world. I think after 9/11, my friends, instead of telling people to go shopping or take a trip, we should have told Americans to join the Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, the military, expand our volunteer, expand what you're doing. Expand the great missions that you are doing, that you're carrying out, not only here in America, but throughout the world, especially in Rwanda. And I hope we have a chance to talk a little bit about that later on. And you know, I'm a little pandering here. The first words of your very successful book is, "This is not about you."
Yeah.
And you know what that really also means? Serve a cause greater than your self-interest.
Yeah. John, you know that a lot of good legislation dies because of partisan politics. And party loyalty keeps people from really getting forward on putting America's best first. Can you give me an example of where you led against your party's interest? Oh, this is hard. and really, maybe against your own best interest for the good of America.
You know, by a strange coincidence, I was not elected Miss Congeniality again in the United States Senate this year. I don't know why. Climate change, out of control spending, torture, the list goes on a large number of issues that I've put my country first and I've reached across the aisle. But I'd probably have to say that one of the times that probably was one of the most trying was when I was first a member of Congress, and I'm new freshman in the House of Representatives and very loyal and dedicated to President Reagan, who I still think is one of the great, great presidents in American history. He won the Cold War without firing a shot, in the words of Margaret Thatcher. He wanted to send troops to Beirut for a peacekeeping mission. My knowledge and my background told me that a few hundred Marines in a situation like that could not successfully carry out any kind of peacekeeping mission, and I thought they were going into harm's way. Tragically, as many of you recall, there was a bombing of the Marine barracks, and well over 100 brave Marines gave their lives. But it was tough, that vote, because I went against the president I believed in the party that believed that maybe I was disloyal very early in my political career.
There's a verse in the Bible that says intelligent people look for ideas. In fact, they search for them. What's the most significant position that you've held 10 years ago that you no longer hold today? I think the point I'm trying to make is that leaders are not stubborn. They do change their mind with additional information. So give me a good example of something that was 10 years ago, you said, that's the way I feel about it, and now 10 years later, it's different. That's not flip-flopping. It's just sometimes growing in wisdom.
Offshore drilling. We got to drill now, and we got to drill here, and we got to become independent and far north. I know that there's some here in California that disagree with that position. Could I also mention very seriously about this issue, my friends? You know that this is a national security issue. We're sending $700 billion a year to countries that don't like us very much, that some of that money is ending up in the hands of terrorist organizations. We cannot allow this greatest transfer of wealth in history and our national security to continue to be threatened. And Rick, I know we've got a lot of issues to cover, but let me just say, at the town hall meetings that I have every day, that's the issue on people's mind is energy. So I think if I could just take 30 seconds. One, we've got to do everything. We've got to do wind, tide, solar, natural gas, hydrogen cars, hybrid cars, electric cars, and we have to have nuclear power in order to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and save on our energy costs. And by the way, in case you hadn't noticed it, the French, 80%, we love to imitate the French, 80% of their electricity is generated by nuclear power. If they can do it and reprocess, we can too, my friends. And by the way, if you hadn't noticed, we now have a pro-American president of France, which shows if you live long enough, anything can happen in America.
Well, you just took the... I had that question later on, but we don't have to ask it. What's the most gut-wrenching decision you've ever had to make? And what was the process that you used to make it?
It was long ago and far away in a prison camp in North Vietnam. My father was a high-ranking admiral. The Vietnamese came and said that I could leave prison early. And we had a code of conduct that said you only leave by order of capture. I also had a dear and beloved friend who was from California named Ev Alvarez, who had been shot down and captured a couple of years before me. But I wasn't in good physical shape. In fact, I was in rather bad physical shape. And so I said no. Now, in interest of full disclosure, I'm very happy I didn't know the war was going to last for another 3 years or so. But I said no, and I'll never forget sitting in my last answer, and the high-ranking officer offered it, slammed the door, and the interrogator said, "Go back to your cell. It's going to be very tough on you now." And it was. But I not only the toughest decision I ever made, but I'm most happy about that decision than any decision I ever made in my life. Could I finally say, it took a lot of prayer. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of prayer.
Great. We'll be right back with